to plead my case. No obvious. Send me in the outer space. And my fingers, I'll be doomed with diamonds and gold. But that ain't gonna help me now.
Yes, trouble. Amen, guys, it's trouble. Say it loud. Amen, sister. You watch out. You see me coming. Because I am going to have some trouble. That doesn't make you feel better. What does? Tell me, what does? What'll make you feel better? President, getting out today, saying, you know what? Things are starting to look up. That makes me feel better. That makes me feel better. How about it's Friday? Does that make you feel better? Friday, you got Nancy Skinner on a Friday afternoon. And so that's got to make you feel better. I hope. I'll try. I'll do my best over the next 3 hours. Good afternoon. It is the Nancy Skinner Show. I'm Nancy Skinner. 1-888-64-TROUBLE. No. We got to get that. We got to stake that one out. It's 1-888-64-NANCY, my number. Or 1-888-0-NANCY. Hey, I'm energized. I'm feeling good. I had a horrible incident I must tell you about, though. Really unnerving. I've been so busy lately. Okay, I'm fessing up to it. Something. I've been so busy lately that my birthday was a couple weeks ago and my plates expired. And I have been trying to get a free half hour before the show to go get my new tags because I'm like, I got to do this. So today I finally found the time, made it to the gym actually, and found the time to get a half hour in. Here I am going in finally and to go get my tags, and I rushed. I'm on Fox Business Network tonight, so I didn't put makeup on because I have a makeup artist that does that. So I'm pulling in. I'm like, oh my gosh, it's Good Friday. They're closed. The one day I finally find to make time for my tags, and they're closed. And it turned out that they weren't closed. But here's the really bad news. So I go in. It didn't take long at all. Everyone's very, very friendly, and I finally get up, and I just saw I was getting tags. And she said, stand in front of the camera. We're going to take your pictures. No, by God, no. I have no makeup on. Are you mad? It's like, well, you need a new license. And I thought it was just tags. So that's horrifying if you're me. You're a woman. I had a suit on and stuff, but no makeup. So that's now all women can relate to this. You have a driver's license and no makeup is your picture. So I don't know. I guess there are more important problems in this world than that. But I had that happen to me today. So I'm just going to have to deal with it. Hey, listen, coming up, like I said, shameless plugs quickly, Fox Business Network. We've got tomorrow. We will give you updates on this. But I will be appearing tomorrow in Detroit at the City County Building with Marcy Wheeler of FireDogLake.com. Jane Hampshire will be in Washington, D.C. This is at 2 p.m. Jane Hampshire will be in Washington, D.C. with Bill Greider. We're all speaking out generally on the same topic we've been talking about, and I will replay this later in the show. A lot of people missed the Jane Hampshire interview because of the streaming and other things from Fire Dog Lake. We are all very, very upset about the behavior of Chase Bank holding Chrysler hostage, essentially, in the negotiations, preferring to liquidate them for their assets. So we're going to take our assets out of Chase, if you will, and affect some change. So we're all going to be speaking. You'll hear more about that. Fire Dog Lake is going to be posting. We're posting at nancyskinnerlive.com. So that's all coming up. We have a top official on green jobs. One of the top administration people are right on the show to talk about green jobs today. And it's coming up next week. It's not Monday, but Tuesday. Tucker Carlson will be joining the program. So a couple of things. And Grover Norquist, after his baby is born. All right, so enough of that, enough of this. Now, listen, I'm the troublemaker, usually. That's my thing on Friday. But someone's trying to get in the trouble limelight a little bit. My boy toy, my Friday boy toy, James Boyce, is out causing trouble all on his own. And it's Friday, so if it's Friday, it's my favorite boy toy, James, joining me. Hi, James.
What do you mean my favorite boy toy? How many are there?
You're it, babe.
Okay.
You are it. The boy's toys. But you are stepping on my toes a little bit by causing some trouble out there. I saw on MSNBC for folks who don't who missed it. Hi, James. First of all, James is I should give you your proper greeting. James.
I just like the boy toy greeting. After that, I'm fine.
James Boyce is one of the original posters at Huffington Post, one of the original three. He also was a senior advisor to John Kerry and Bill Richardson. And he's a regular guest on MSNBC, where he caused quite a stir this week. Let me set this up for you. Here was your pitch. This is the game. It is game day. It's opening day here in Detroit, by the way. So that's a good analogy. We'll stick with that. The Tigers are winning 8-0, right, John? Yeah. So there's a good sign, a good omen for the Motor City. All right, here was the pitch.
Well, of course it should, Contessa, but unfortunately within the Republican Party, there is a segment of that group.
Wait, okay, that's not in there. The question was about an immigration plan on the table that is a compromise pursued to get both sides of the issue together to actually pass something. That was the opening question.
Well, the Contessa Brewer said, with President Obama's plan, where people are going to, pay a fine, they're going to learn English, and they're going to go to back of the line, and over time they'll earn citizenship, and that seems like responsible immigration reform, and why won't it happen? And you and I both know why won't it happen, and the clip that you started to play, if you want to play that clip.
That's
why it's not going to happen, and so I said it.
Okay, he said it, though. There you go.
Well, of course it should, Contessa, but unfortunately within the Republican Party, there is a segment of that group that is very anti-immigration. They're essentially racist. They do not want these people in the country. They want the people that are in the country to be thrown out.
Wow.
They don't care for them as, human beings or as people. And it is. This is the fourth rail now of American politics, and I'm happy
wow.
to press.
Well,
Contessa,
go ahead. Wow.
But the thing was, I was sitting there in the chair, and this Nancy, and you get kind of that little bit of sweat going on your back going, well, maybe I shouldn't have said that. But then I got off, and what's amazing, Nancy, is everybody has said to me since that moment, thank you. A friend of mine I haven't talked to in 20 years sent me an email. Kudos for telling it like it is. You know what I mean?
Well, I went back and listened to it really closely. I saw the quick thing, and it was almost, James, my view of it was that their reaction was a little over the top to what you actually said. Because I want people to hear this very carefully. Because that is when an anchor, it's rare to hear an anchor go, wow, I can't believe you. Oh my God. That's usually not their role. So it does take you back. And then I go, well, what the heck did he say that was just so wow-ish? So here, let's listen in slow-mo. We can't slow-mo this down, can we, John? No, in our new studios, we'll be able to do everything in those studios. But let's try this.
Well, of course it should, Contessa, but unfortunately within the Republican Party, there is a segment of that group that is very anti-immigration. They're essentially racist. They do not want these people in the country. They want the people that are in the country to be thrown out.
Wow.
They don't care for them as, human beings or as people. And it is. This is the fourth rail now of American politics. And I'm happy
wow.
to try. Contessa,
that's
well, of course it should, contest.
Wow. What you said was that there is, within the Republican Party, there is a segment that does not support immigration, which is essentially racist, that their opposition to immigration is based not on the soundness of the policy, but in an internalized sort of xenophobic racist thing. Is that the thought you were conveying, James?
Yeah, that's what I said. I didn't call the Republican Party racist.
No.
I didn't call all Republican racist. And in fact, I didn't even call this segment racist. I said they're essentially racist in their approach.
Approach, right.
Right. They're Caucasian, white. There is a segment of the Republican Party that is Caucasian, white only, white dominant, and you see it in a lot of things. And what was amazing is that, their reaction was, I called out the elephant in the room on the Republican Party on this thing, and that's their reaction. Oh, no, we're talking about legitimate policy differences. And it really drives me crazy.
Let's listen to your, who was your counterpart on this? Ben, what was
Ben
it?
Port from the McCain campaign.
Okay, so here's what he had to say.
Ben.
James, I got a caution in your tone. I think that is ridiculous. And your comments on racism and all that is exactly why Americans are tuning out on a day-by-day basis on partisan politics. I think that that is an embarrassing point of view from you.
Well,
and the
you
truth,
know, the
no,
Republicans,
hold on just a second.
Republicans
and the truth
gonna,
is, okay. the truth is that Republicans are well as interested in dealing with immigration as Democrats are. We're up here every single day talking legislation and talking about the topics, regardless of how heated it is. I think I really caution you on your tone.
James,
when,
I'm going to caution you.
Talking about the Republican Party.
I have to caution you on your tone. Oh my God, about the racism comments about the Republican Party. So he's just essentially taken something completely out of context, and he's cautioning you on your tone. We'll come back and talk about this because I feel your pain, buddy, on this. And so does Rush Limbaugh. He got called a fascist yesterday by someone in Chicago. I don't know if you heard that one, but
another truth teller out there.
Not anything like what the trouble you caused. James Boyce, my boy Toya, on Friday. We're going to go through this and culture wars back in the news just briefly. Come on. Have we had enough all meltdown all the time? There is a Politico has a report about the return, the vengeance of the culture wars. And I'm going to tell you why when we come back on the Nancy Skinner Show. Led Zeppelin in here, John. When I came, I said, brought him some Zeppelin. And we need some Zeppelin in here. He said, you're blowing my mind. You're my whole image of you. What? I like Zeppelin, too. That's just, it's a little of me. It is the Nancy Skinner Show, 1-888-64-NANCY with James Boyce, my boy toy on Friday, who got himself in, he said, in some trouble, kind of play off the word game on MSNBC. But James, before we continue with this discussion, you've already got a shout out from Andrea. She writes into the program to Nancy at nancyskinnerlive.com. She says, yay, James, that is awesome. Thank you, James, for speaking truth to power. Don't let anybody intimidate you. People who are powerful and have a lot to lose by having their racist views exposed to the light of day will certainly try. I have another take on why the Republicans don't want immigration reform. They love keeping the illegals illegal. It makes the labor cheap, cheap, cheap. Modern-day slavery, writes in Andy. James, you know, here's what I think. Just for folks who were just coming to the program, James talked about immigration. He said there is a segment of the population which of the
Republican Party.
Right, of the Republican Party. Well, let's just play it again for the people because it's only 20.
Oh, of course it should contest it, but unfortunately within the Republican Party, there is a segment of that group that is very anti-immigration. They're essentially racist. They do not want these people in the country. They want the people that are in the country to be thrown out.
Wow.
They don't care for them as, you know, human beings or as people. And it is. This is the fourth rail now of American politics.
Wow, first.
I'm happy
wow.
to press.
Well,
Contessa,
go ahead.
Well,
I think he said wow first and then she said wow. Did you notice that, James?
It's the first time I've ever made Contessa say wow, Nancy.
Wow. No, but he said it first. He actually said wow and then she said wow. So that's interesting. I'm wondering if there was a little bit of leading or baiting going on. In any case, here's what I think. When you talk about the immigration issue, come on, folks. I mean, for a certain, there are some people who are dedicated to the issue as an issue. Lou Dobbs has been beating that drum way too loudly for a long time now, in my view. But during the last election, it became one of the only hot button culture war issues that the right really had any play into the general mainstream public with is sort of, you know, picking on, you couldn't pick on the same old liberals and feminists and feminazis and all that. It became immigrants, and there was sort of, because of the hurting economy, people who felt like my job is endangered, which there is legitimacy to the issue of whether these are affecting the economy or not, but they were scapegoats, and that was a political tool for some people who could care less about the issue. It was just politically expedient. Is that what you're talking about?
That's what I'm talking about. And I'm also just talking about the outrageous hypocrisy within the Republican Party, and particularly within the Republican Christian right. Because, you know, my personal views are not extremely Christian. They're more in line of a Buddhism view, but we'll talk about that for another time. But I understand the religion. I understand, well, it is. It's Good Friday and Sunday's Easter. And I understand Christianity well enough, having been raised Episcopalian, to see the fundamental hypocrisy to say that you're a Christian, but you don't think that immigrant children deserve school or health care. You know, and I just think that exposes the hypocrisy in the Republican Party. I mean, how can you not? There are 12 million people living in our country in the shadows, and President Obama has put together a very smart plan, which had the details haven't even been released of it yet. He's not even going to talk about it for another month. And he's doing it like he approaches many things. You can agree or disagree, but he's very thoughtful.
James, on that note, I'm up against my hard break here. And we'll, on the other side, we'll finish this thought, and we'll throw the Notre Dame controversy in here. Let's really mix it up.
Exactly.
All right. Hang on, my boy toy, James Boyce. It's a Friday on the Nancy Skinner Show. The underperformer in chief, President Barack Obama, Arizona State University believes so. He's too inexperienced to get an honorary degree as a commencement speaker, standard for their commencement speakers. Before I get into that, oh my God, we're going to get into that with James Boyce on Friday and my boy toy, James Boyce. There's so much fun stuff. Do you make fun stuff happen, James, just so that when I'm working all week slogging through the global meltdown and the war on error and the mark-to-market and global wars and stuff and G20, that you can come on the show Friday and just have fun with me?
Yes. My role in life. That's what John tells me to do. He says, come on, make fun for Nancy.
You push these stories out there. You make institutions, collegiate institutions do really stupid things just in time. All right, how about this? James Boyce from Huffington Post is with me. President Obama got a you know, terrific bang-out reception in all of Europe with the whole Islamic world in Turkey. But not so much in South Bend, okay? Not so good in South Bend as...
Good reception in Iraq, I might.
In Iraq, oh, yes, that was... The troops were... Yeah, that had to drive President Bush to drink. Because Dick Cheney, of course, is really... He's strapped down at this point. President Bush, that must have hurt him to see that overwhelming reception. Anyways, I'm not going to dwell on that because I actually have great respect for President Bush right now. Before you get into Notre Dame, I had this moment yesterday, James, where and we're going to get into that, Karl Rove and he's flapping his lips big time about Biden and they said that George Bush is just choosing to just not get himself in, at no comment, he's not involved, and I almost had this moment, I haven't felt this, a moment of respect for him for not saying anything, you know, getting into this complete smackdown, which is inappropriate. Do you feel the same?
Well,
or no?
Yes, I think it's actually a little bit different, though. I think that from the moment the election happened in November, you've never seen an administration or a president become more overwhelmingly irrelevant. And I think that's what really happened to President Bush, and it's fairly shocking. And in some ways, I don't think anybody's asking him his opinion, to be honest. But you would have to give him credit. I mean, it is true that at least he, among all of those people in the former administration, is respecting, you know, somewhat a traditional role of a former president and former administration officials, at least not right off the bat, criticizing the incoming administration or the new administration. So yes, you would have to give President Bush credit for that.
Because, you know, unlike Karl Rove, here's Karl Rove, cannot resist the chance, and I have a theory on this as well.
I think there are very few presidents who spend hours with somebody in the Oval Office, particularly with all due respect, a blowhard like Joe Biden
with
was. I mean, this guy is, I've seen him in some meetings when he came to the White House. He was, he was, you know, would have outbursts and say something that didn't really make much sense. This is not the kind of guy who becomes the confidant of any president of either party.
With all due respect, a blowhard. I think that's a non sequitur.
Wow!
Yeah,
Contessa Molinita.
Right. I think she did that interview actually. So why wasn't she freaking out? You've just called the president of the United States a blowhard on television. I can't recall. I just really maybe I'm sure I'm mistaken, but a vice president when Cheney was in office, I can't recall people calling him a blowhard.
No, but you know. Yeah, you know.
Here's the theory, though. Here's the question, and I am going to get back to Norma Dick. The question she asked, though, and she said, "Listen, if George Bush wanted Karl Rove to shut up, he would." And apparently, there's a number of people out there from his administration that are vowing to protect his reputation. She said, "Can't he?" No, it was it was not Contessa. It was O'Donnell. What's her name?
Laura O'Donnell. Laura.
Laura O'Donnell, yeah.
Nora.
Yes, very lovely lady. So she said that, I just have this feeling that if Bush picked up the phone and said, Karl, stop it. So if he's not, if he had the ability to do it and Karl Rove is out there calling Biden a blowhard, what do you take from that?
Well, you know, I think the political read was there that, you know, that Bush may not be saying anything, but everybody's correct. I mean, if Bush called up Karl Rove and said, shut up, Karl Rove would shut up. So, you know, you have to believe at the worst, or the best, depending on your point of view in the situation, you know, George Bush is endorsing, you know, Cheney and Rove going out there and doing that. But
here's what you forgot, James, though, in that analysis, otherwise very astute analysis. George,
well, I thought we screwed it up. Go ahead, you go. Your turn.
George Bush doesn't watch TV or read newspapers. Remember, that's why we got here. So
well, somebody, friend of his would call. But you know, honestly, you know, Nancy, I really think that you know, leaving office is difficult for any person. But I really think that you know, Bush has really plunged into irrelevancy very quickly.
Don't say that to the brush. At Crawford, the brush don't think he's irrelevant. They're happy to have him, the brush at Crawford. All right, let's go back. Yeah, he has. Well, it's not so much irrelevancy, James. I would say it's that the aftermath, it's like that was the eye of the tornado, you know, and now the rest of the storm is hitting us. The wake of his, the destruction is hitting us, and we're so busy trying to pick up the pieces that we forgot. You know, and I guess there's a certain question about, did you see Alec Baldwin posted on your Huffington Post about he's mad that so much time is spent looking backwards. What did he say, that Keith Olbermann is spending too much time on Bush?
I think Alex is dead wrong about that. I think the Democrats who say you need to move forward and not look back are dead wrong about it, because all that's going to happen is the Democrats are going to get blamed for everything unless it's firmly and finally and forever placed in the hands of the Republicans. I think that.
Well, yeah, except that's the political analysis, and I agree with you on that. But the real-world analysis is that we do have to actually deal with the storm upon us. And, you know,
well, I agree with that, but I think...
Throw
you know,
the life preservers that. Out and, you know, try and save as many people as we can.
Right, but when you see stuff that Tim Geithner is get more of the public blames Tim Geithner for the financial crisis than George Bush, you know you're going to have a problem down the line politically.
Really? I hadn't seen that. Is that a poll?
Front page in the Stan Greenberg did a poll.
Oh my. Okay. Then I stand corrected. You are right on that.
I stand correct.
Well,
okay.
You know what? You know, to me, that's just it's disheartening, because the fact that first of all, I don't believe it on its face value. I think most Americans understand in 2 months you could never have created this level of an economic blow up. It just doesn't happen.
Well,
it's never.
Yeah, I think that's right. But I think what's going to happen is, you know, the Democrats are in a very, you know, just purely hard politics. The Democrats are in a tough position because they control the Senate, they control the House, and they control the White House. And, you know, there may be some glimmers of hope out there. I'm not so sure there are, but there may be. But the world's not going to look very good economically still in the United States a year from now when the, believe it or not, the 2012 presidential campaign starts to heat up. And it's going to be fairly easy pickings, I fear, for the Republicans. So
you think so because of the economy?
I do.
Because of Obama's economy.
Well, you know, they're conscious. The thing about Republicans is, you know, they don't let, you know, bless their hearts, they don't let facts stand in the way. And, you know, they're out there pounding it. You know, this is Obama's economy. Obama's Wall Street CEO. You know, this is Obama's economy. And what's that, you know, people are expecting a lot out of Barack Obama. And a year from now, things may be slightly better, Nancy, but they're not going to be great. You know,
yeah,
I mean,
absolutely.
In the state of Michigan, you know, bless everyone's heart out there, they're not going to be great in Michigan a year from now. It's still going to be pretty bad out there. And, you know, and people are going to say, wow, what did the Democrats do?
Well,
you know, they had the House, they had the Senate, they had the White House, and things are worse.
Yeah,
you know?
this is why I think that they have to push through health care and cap and trade, all these things in budget reconciliation, and just do it and get it over with. That I asked a White House correspondent yesterday, what is the White House's response to this? I guess Chuck Schumer and others are saying they're open to doing this if the conservative Democrats who are blocking this stuff are going to push it. They're willing to do it. What are you hearing on the ground there about this tentativeness about budget reconciliation? You have the votes. Do it. Just get it over with. Fire. Pull the trigger. Right? Is that your view?
Oh, I agree. And also I think, and this is a little bit counterintuitive, but, you know, I think I'd use a basketball analogy, and I'm sorry about your Michigan State Spartans. I mean, sorry
yeah.
that they lost to the hated North Carolina Tar Heels, because I went to Duke, and I haven't been feeling well all week. But President Obama needs to play for one. I mean, he really needs to go out in this term and really do what's right, do everything he can do, meet his campaign promises, and do what he knows is he really shouldn't listen to people that say, hey, let's do that in the second term. Let's push that off. And you're already hearing that from people, by the way. You know, let's push that off. He shouldn't do that because it's going to be a very tough reelection in 2012 for President Obama.
I'll tell you what, here's why he has to play for one. Beyond the politics of it all, you know, I keep alerting people to this. Here we go. Here's why he should play for one. James, Antarctic ice shelf, half the size of Scotland, on the verge of collapse.
Right.
It's in the last stages of collapse, could break up within days. Scientists are alarmed. I don't know why they keep saying they're alarmed. These keep breaking off, and every time they're alarmed, they essentially thought it would happen much later than it really is. So, you know, I mean, this is the idea why you play for one, because you don't have a choice. You know, the real, that's what I keep, when I always talk about the political game and the reality game, it's like the real game is, this is your chance to do what's right. And the question is, do we think he's essentially there for his own aggrandizement, or do we think he's there to get this done? And I know the guy. I think he's there to get this done. But I don't understand why the hesitancy about budget reconciliation then. Is it just timing? Is it just give those guys a little bit of time to find their sanity, and if they don't come around, whack them?
It may be a while, Nancy.
No, I'm not talking about the GOP. I'm talking about the conservative Democrats.
Oh, my.
Oh, no, no. Now you're scaring me.
I don't know. There's some scuttlebutt going around inside the Democratic Party that's fairly unappealing, and those same conservative Democrats will be awfully shocked when they run into some really tough challenges in 2010 and 2012 if they don't do anything. Yeah, I mean, the congressional races for 2010 will be heating up soon, you know, and there's a lot of people out there. You're starting to hear it already.
Now, you can't put that word, there's a lot of scuttlebutt out there, and not give me a piece of that, boy toy. You can't do that to me, and you can't do that to my listeners. So I'm not going to let you get away with that one. Well, you'll have to at least hint at scuttlebutt, if you're going to be the boy toy.
Segments of the party are essentially scuttlebutt.
So when we come back, we'll hear what James Scuttlebutt is, because this guy is very well connected. Trust me, you do want to hear what the scuttlebutt is from him. And we'll take your calls. 1-888-64 Nancy. You're always invited into this conversation. I know we go through a lot of stuff quickly on a Friday, but that's just the way it is. You're always part of this conversation. Everyone, if you agree, disagree, that's why I have two phone numbers. 1-888-64-NANCY and 1-888-0-NANCY. They're just the same number. Because she thinks she's smart. Okay, advanced degree, honorary or otherwise, are not a requirement to listen to the Nancy Skinner Show. Just turn your radio on or stream it. 1-888-64-NANCY, the number to the program. James Boyce is with me from Huffington Post. James, let's get Paul in here. He has a quick question about what we've been talking about, and I do want to get to Notre Dame in Arizona. We're running out of time, and they're very hot on my hot button list. Hi, Paul in Irvine. You wanted to jump in on this with James and I. Hi, Paul. Thanks for holding on.
Hi, Nancy. Hi, James. Great to talk to you. Now, Nancy, I'm really curious about what you think liberals and conservatives really have in common, because I listen to all the pundits and I'm turned off by people like Michelle Bachmann and O'Reilly and Limbaugh and whatnot and everything. But I really do want to understand what it is they have to bring to the table that's polarizing, that doesn't like turn us off the way they do.
You want to know what I think is not polarizing?
Yeah, I want you to tell me what we can learn from conservatives, because you seem like an understanding person. You seem like someone who likes to ask questions, who wants to really understand the other. So maybe give us an idea of like what you think.
Okay. I would say this. Here's what I would say in general. Just that I think that both you really do need competing political philosophies. That the progressive one is let's move forward, progress, you know, there in the term, and then conservatives kind of are you know, not so fast, push back. That's the traditional conservative mentality. I like the ideas of the conservative traditional you know, mentality of smaller government, capitalism, free markets. I think all of those are very important principles, that we should have freedom, the libertarian streak, that we should all be allowed to live our lives as we see fit. And that includes, and that this will be a segue into the Notre Dame thing, that the most personal of choices. What bothers me is that a lot of that great, those foundations for conservatism have not been practiced as such by the Republican Party, who use those very strong foundations of conservatism as what they run on, but not how they govern. Does that answer?
Right.
Go ahead. I'm sorry. Let Paul make sure you feel satisfied with that before I move on.
Yes, that sounds pretty good to me. Okay. Thank you, Nancy.
You bet. Okay. All right. So, James, do you have a thought on that?
No, I think you're right.
Okay.
Right.
All right. So.
You stand correct, and I'll leave you be.
Okay, so it's not the ideas, it's the people that how they kind of use that and then don't deliver. All right, so why on earth would he even want to get involved in this? President Obama on May 17th was invited by Notre Dame to give the commencement address. A group of 10 priests and many are objecting. They wrote a letter printed in a student newspaper objecting to the president's visit. It's our deep conviction that Notre Dame should be led by word and deed in upholding the church's fundamental teaching that human life must be respected. they go on to say that the university pursues a dangerous course when it allows itself to decide for and by itself what part of being a Catholic institution it will choose to embrace. And Randall Terry and others, abortion opponents, promised to have a circus atmosphere at his commencement address. One, why would he want to go?
Why would Barack Obama want to go? Well, he was invited and he accepted.
Okay.
I think it's a legitimate thing for Barack Obama to do. I think what's interesting, Nancy, is this is one of those examples. There's a great newspaper article that I'll send to you in case you want to pop up on nancyskinnerlive.com, which is, you know, they tried to do this protest and nobody showed up. They said they're going to have a protest at Notre Dame at 10 o'clock, and five people showed up, you know. And I'm not so sure that there's really much of a protest here in the end. I think, you know, it's a small group of people getting a little media and a little publicity, but, you know, it doesn't look like there's much of a, much of a groundswell of opposition, actually, to President Obama showing up.
Well, here's what I think about this thing. Look at the difference having Obama chose Rick Warren for his invocation. He reached across the political religious divide, if you will, and broke bread. And the Catholic Church can't seem to, you know, get the teaching, the bigger picture, the do unto others, the golden rule teaching of that act, that simple gesture. You know, to me.
That's exactly right.
Right.
Democracy.
Word
of the day.
That's the word of the day, Friday, this Friday, on the Nancy Skinner Show with Boy Toy James Boyce. Hey, did you post a HuffPo today?
I have not, but I'm actually doing an extensive post for Monday morning about the whole thing with MSNBC and the racism issue.
Wow.
We're going to include clips from the show. My trusted compatriot, Max Bernstein, out there in Los Angeles has been, you can listen to your show live online off of NancySkinnerLive.com, and he's been recording the show, and we're gonna put a big post up about MSNBC's reaction and actually the support and the good emails I've gotten from just so many people about calling it like it is.
We're gonna call you James Wow Voice from now on. Hey James, I'm out of time. Always a pleasure, my friend. Have a great weekend.
All right, I'll talk to you next Friday.
Okay, that's James Voice, Huffington Post. Wow, 1-888-64 Nancy. Hey, top official green jobs, we'll tell you what that means coming up next. So let your good stuff rain down on me. Day of Trouble this week. The show tonight. We're talking about President Obama's statements earlier today when he met with his economic advisors. Some statements of hope about the economy. We'll be talking about that on the Fox Business Network tonight. So you can catch me there, see me on TV, and I'll have makeup on by then. Unlike when I got my driver's license today. We'll look forward to that on the Nancy Skinner Show. 1-888-64 Nancy, the number to the program. All right. So the president was somewhat hopeful. We'll get into that in a little bit, some of his comments. He gave reason for hope, but he also, look at some indicators are starting to look better. But he also said, look, the employment figures, it's going to be a while to work this through. You have all these stimulus packages and everything work their way through the pipeline and to get going. So have faith and hang in there, essentially was his message to the press today. And so we're just gonna dig in a little bit. A lot of talk during the campaign, obviously, about green jobs and green collar jobs. And especially when you're in Detroit, you might have no jobs. We really want to hear a little bit more about what is being done vis-a-vis green jobs, green collar jobs, as they are called. So joining me to talk about that is Kate Michael. She's a program analyst in the green collar job department at the D.C. Department of Employment Services. And has a B.A. in business, magna cum laude. She has a dual M.A. in government and M.B.A. from John Hopkins University. Has worked for the Senate and been active in a lot of organizations. Therefore, she would never qualify to get an honorary degree from the University of Arizona. Way too overqualified. That's why we want her on the program. Hi, Kate.
Hi, thanks, Nancy, so much for having me on.
No, we like smart people telling us things. So thank you so much for the work you're doing. Kate, I talk a lot about green jobs. In fact, I ran against President Obama in the primary in 2004 in the Democratic primary, and that was my main issue, was green jobs. And global warming is the reason I got involved in politics and media. So mm-hmm. I've been saying, look, this is an opportunity, and not that he got that from me, but he heard me talk about it ad nauseum at 10 debates, that I've always maintained, as people would say, I hear this even in reporting as recently as today, that we have to have a balance, that when we talk about protecting the environment or dealing with climate change, and I'm talking about this Antarctic ice shelf that's about to break off the half the size of Scotland, the news reports are, when we talk about the word balance, I reject that the word balance is even valid, because the idea is when we start to embrace these challenges, you're creating this void of jobs that needs to be filled. Is that, you want to add to that the concept of green jobs, or describe how you even describe to people what a green job is?
Sure. Well, Nancy, you were right. The topic really came about during the last campaign, when a lot of politicians started talking about green jobs and this green industry and green economy that we could have, and everyone kind of scratched their head and said, green, what is that? Well, you know, we have blue-collar jobs, we have white-collar jobs, we have pink and gray-collar jobs, which a lot of people might not know about. But a green-collar job is an environmentally sustainable job. In absence of a definition from the Department of Labor, every state has been defining green job however they best see fit for their own state. And Washington, D.C., decided to depart a little bit from what some other states were doing and not define a green job as a blue-collar job with an environmental focus. We think that it can be a blue or a white-collar job that's environmentally sustainable, meaning that not only can you be a carpenter working on a green building or a building that's been LEED certified, but you could also be, and this may be a stretch for some people, but a bike messenger.
Yeah, that's going to be a stretch.
It could be a stretch for some people.
But don't tell that to Rush Limbaugh. He'll have a field day with it. But you
could also be an accountant working for a company that
a CFO of a wind company that's
got
too many orders to too many orders to fulfill at this point. They're so backed up that we need to build these facilities, and so you could be doing high end finance for Kappa models to finance new wind turbine production facilities. All right, so it's a across the economic spectrum. So where do you start?
Where do we start? Well, what we are doing at the Department of Employment Services is first finding training for these people. We're expecting, especially with all of the stimulus funds that have come down, that there will be an influx in the number of people that want to be energy auditors and especially do weatherization work, because those were specifically mentioned in the stimulus. So how do we employ those people if they're not trained to do that kind of work? We need to find people that can train for energy auditing or train for weatherization, which typically has been people that already know something about the building industry or people that already know something about being an electrician. So bringing on those entrepreneurial individuals for training.
And people have to think differently about this, so I'm glad this applies everywhere you are, folks. It's not just D.C. because just a quick story, Kate. I was in New York, I don't know, about a month ago, and this cab driver, the guy was driving a cab, and we started talking, and he was driving me to LaGuardia. And he said he had a construction business for years, and it went under, and he's driving a cab. And all I could say, I didn't have a whole lot of time. I was trying to catch my flight. I said, so you know construction, right? And he was a young guy, probably 28, 29, kind of despondent about this is going to be my future. I said, go to your computer and Google LEED certified, L-E-E-D, LEED certified. Go figure out what that is. Go get certified. Go through this program of learning energy efficient home building design and construction. And then restart your company up as a LEED certified. And the guy, he wrote it down. He said, someday if I ever see you again, I wonder if I ever run into that cab driver again. I said, trust me on this. If you know construction, it's not a leap to learn what LEED certified construction is and then get in the front of the line of being that person.
That is so true. Here in the district, everyone will need to be LEED certified working on buildings because we've passed a law. We passed a law in 2006. The Green Building Act of 2006 says that all buildings over 50,000 square feet, which basically is every building in the district, must be LEED silver or above.
Now, explain to folks what that is. I'll let you.
Okay. LEED is Leadership in Energy and Environmental Design. It is something more for, instead of just builders, but maybe more when you're looking at how you're designing architecturally the building, to show that it reduces its carbon footprint. Now, to make something LEED certified, you have a number of different avenues you can take. You can choose to put a green roof on the building, which is something that DC buildings typically choose to do. They might have more or less windows than your typical building.
I'll just sum it up. Because I don't want, it's about the job aspect. It's really a package, an option, if you will, of making buildings much more tighter, tightening the envelope, making them more energy efficient, which is what a lot of the stimulus is designed to do. So if you're talking about finding energy auditors, if you don't, all you have to do basically is what's your training program for them. It would seem to me that you got to go around and you got to look at, you know, there are devices that measure where there is, where you have releases of heat, right?
And generally around your windows is one place that a lot of people have energy escaping from their homes.
So, but if you, I want to be an auditor. What kind of people? You could be from any background. You could be an unemployed secretary and move into this field, folks. It's about
absolutely can.
It's curiosity about, okay, what is a green job? And then, like, all right, we've talked about one. Let's give some people some other, throw some other ideas out there, because some people say, well, that's not my bag. I don't want to be going around other people's houses and looking for more escaping energy.
I like to break up green jobs into four main buckets, and I call them build, buy, bridge, and beautify. Build is construction. Buy is green products and services, bridge is alternative technologies, and beautify are those things that are typically green. Arborists would be green jobs. Landscapers would be green jobs. There's something for everyone if you really think about it. Any job can be a green job.
Mm-hmm. And what's the buy category? What are you putting there?
I put green products and services in that category because there are a number of cleaners that are green these days, clothing, retail, a lot of just green products and services that you can find and that people are actually specifically going to find and are looking for retailers that sell that merchandise.
Right. So if you're looking for a job in that area as opposed to being someone who already sells that product, think creatively, people. Think buying clubs. Thinking of starting a, you know, this is where the...
Or an organic eatery.
Yeah, whatever, restaurants or, I don't know, do they serve kamikazes? There are lots of opportunities even when you, as a consumer, you're buying these products. But I want people to start thinking about how, especially if they're in underemployed areas, where maybe you have a job but it's not paying your bills, there are marginal things you can do to add to your income that fall into this category, right, Kate?
Definitely.
Okay, so if people want more information in general, do you have a website that you should send them to?
Well, you can find out about what the District of Columbia is doing in green at green.dc.gov.
At green.dc.gov?
Green.dc.gov.
Great. Well, good luck to you, because we need a lot of people to work and we need a lot of people to bring down our carbon footprint quick. So
we certainly do. Thank you.
Thanks, Kate Michael. Is doing the Lord's work out there. If I weren't on the radio, I'd be doing that. But I figured that maybe I can have a bigger impact if I'm telling a lot of people how to do that and selling one light bulb at a time. But, you know, hey, I'm in Detroit. I'm going to be selling light bulbs myself. We're going to just look on the bright side and come back. More to come. Lots going on this Friday on The Nancy Skinner Show. Yeah, put your thinking cap on big time. And if you're feeling down and out about the situation, visually put it on and say, all right, I'm going to think outside the box here. It is the Nancy Skinner Show. 1-888-64-NANCY. Just a couple of thoughts I had during the break following an interview with Kate Michael, who's working on green collar jobs for the District of Columbia. But I talk to people a lot just anecdotally about this, you know, when they say green jobs, what does that mean? And, you know, a lot of people who are unemployed or underemployed, I'm sitting on the break going, how do I describe this? Let me sum this up. Think about what it is you do now, what you have done in the past, and then think, okay, where is there a need? How could I transition that into filling a need? I am a huge believer that you end up where you end up in your career because of a reason. That if you look at my career, the bizarre twists and turns, for example, because I have myself to work with here, I'm a finance major. I mean, what are the odds? Okay, finance major from U of M. I could have gone to Wall Street. That was an option on the table. I didn't do that. I ended up working on green jobs, actually. Sustainable development. How do we finance the alternative energies of the future? That's where my passion was. And one thing led me to another. I worked in that field for 10 years, and I said, we got to get out on the airwaves and start talking about this. That led me into media, which eventually I said, then we got to put our money where our mouth is. I ran for office and lost a couple times. But I lost big. I lost to the President of the United States. If you're going to lose, that's the way to lose. And I learned a lot in the process, and I'm back out here. So it's always about looking, where have you been in your life? And what does that tell you about perhaps where you can turn this? And layer on top of it the green aspect of where we are all headed, and think of opportunities. I'll give you another example, someone I know personally from my work. Ray Anderson was the CEO of the largest carpeting, industrial and commercial carpeting company in the country, world, actually. And he had a big wake-up call moment in his life as well. And he decided, you know what I'm going to do is I'm going to take this. They were, you know, wasting a lot of material because think of hotels and big plants and facilities where there's all this carpet. They rip it up and they throw it in the landfill where it exists forever. So Ray got creative and said, how about if we make carpet tiles? And he had a certain size tile. And we don't replace the entire building. We just replace those worn tiles. And then, they did that. So it became tiled carpeting. Then what he did is he said, okay, now what we're going to do is take those tiles and recycle them so there's zero recycled product. Or zero unused product, all 100% recycled, and so they are recycled. Then the concept got larger and larger, and it was like we are going to somehow account for every bit of carbon that we put out. And in each step of the way, his company grew and grew and grew and made more money. That's the concept. That's just a perfect example of that concept. So as we're just thinking about green jobs and what it is, are you a teacher? Maybe you're unemployed as a teacher. Think about an environmental educator. What would you need to do to become an environmental educator and use that, but just top up off your training to include a knowledge of these ideas? Here's an idea. I sit down actually with a pen and paper and go, okay, ideas. Need ideas. Here's one. I was just thinking during the break. We've been talking about newspapers over the last couple of days, and because Alec Baldwin said I want to read the New York Times, I myself gave it up to be more environmentally friendly, and I go online, but I feel I miss my newspapers. I really miss the local papers and the New York Times, and I know those people are hurting, and those are jobs as well. So what about this? What about if you distributed a leaflet? I know this might be corny, but I'll put it out there. To your block, to your neighborhood, saying, you know what, some people read the papers in the morning, some people don't have a chance till they get home at night. Would you sign up to a service that shared those papers? Would you, you know, share the cost to say, we're going to get the New York Times and Wall Street Journal or whatever, or create a little list and do that so that those papers just keep them in good shape? You know, that's a business. That's a side business. I know it could be kind of big, I guess. Maybe it's silly, but I always think of lots of ideas. What hasn't been done? Because, you know, Steve Jobs said that. Really great entrepreneurs always start with that question. Where is there a need? Where is there a void? What hasn't been done? Instead of looking through the want ads, what do you want? What's your ad, I would say, is my advice on that. All right. I'm going to get into controversy. I've done my good deed. I'm taking my thinking cap off. I'm mad about this University of Arizona thing. And President Obama. I'll share it with you on the other side of the Nancy Skinner Show. Would you put me upon a bookshelf with the books and the plants? Desperate, but not serious. Your kisses dry.
And it is this. I am a parochial school product, as I believe the both of you are. I've never met anyone who is pro-death. I'm a Catholic. I buy into the entire range of social justice programs that are the foundation of the Catholic faith, including a respect for all life at each and every level. So, Pat Buchanan, let's start with you. Why is it that I am in favor of President Obama, and people might want to yell at me for that, going to Notre Dame?
I wouldn't yell at you for that. Let me tell you why. It's not Obama. Why I think Father Jenkins, whom I know, I think made a terrible mistake here. Mike, Notre Dame is an embodiment and a transmitter of Catholic values, teachings, doctrine. It stands for certain uncontradicted truths. Abortion is an intrinsic evil. It is the slaughter of the innocent unborn, and 50 million have perished in the United States. Catholics have fought for 35 years to turn this around, to reverse Roe v. Wade. And the premier Catholic university, or one of them, as you said, invites to the campus someone who is militantly pro-abortion, for partial birth abortion, federal funding of abortions abroad, federal funding in the United States, Freedom of Choice Act, which will eliminate all restraints. It is a sign of moral befuddlement and confusion on the part of Notre Dame, which stands for life, to have someone there who admittedly is a president of the United States, but someone who so contradicts their fundamental values. And people who love the church and love Notre Dame say, you should not be doing this.
It was quite the smackdown last night on Hardball. That's the opening preview. Mike Barnicle setting it up for a dogfight. A dogfight it was. On Good Friday. Why not? It's Good Friday and Passover week. Let's duke it out about this. To be honest with you, it is the Nancy Skinner Show. I'm Nancy Skinner, 1-888-64-NANCY. I am faced with a little crisis. I don't know which is worse. I'm hearing the whole controversy over Notre Dame and the fact that some are mad, some of the priests are mad that he's been invited to speak, or University of Arizona, which offered him the commencement address and then denied him the honorary degree that usually goes with that. I don't know which one is more befuddling to me, and I'm trying to sort this out and sort of break it down into the, okay, which one is stupider? Get my logical thinking cap on. I guess I got to put my thinking cap back on and to be able to figure out which is more egregious. Notre Dame, which this is kind of like we've gone through this controversy before. You have the Catholic Church saying that that pro-choice politicians should not be allowed to go to church because of the one viewpoint, which is freedom of choice as relates to abortion, neglecting, and this is what the smackdown's about, I'll give you more of that, the other side of the Catholic Church's position on the death penalty. It's kind of an ongoing dispute. The University of Arizona situation is different in that they invited him to speak, give a commencement speech. It's Arizona State University. I stand corrected because that is really an important distinction, because I'm going to lambaste this university. So if I'm going to lambaste a university, I want to get it right. And the reason I am is because they ask him to speak May 13th. He accepts. And they said they won't be giving him an honorary degree. Because spokesperson, let me get her words correct, ASU Media Relations Director Sharon Keeler says, unlike other universities, the processes for selecting commencement speakers and honorary degree recipients are independent. She says that honorary degrees are given for an achievement of eminence, and that Obama was not considered for an honorary degree because his body of achievements at this time does not fit within that criteria. They have given these honors to a deputy finance minister in China of education and a whole host of bizarre other people that we can go through that. I'll get that list. But I guess I'm trying to get to the narrow this in on the question of which one is more egregious to you at 1-888-64. Not which one I think is egregious. I just don't know which situation is more laughable or more ridiculous at 1-888-64-NANCY. Let me get this straight. Arizona State University. If I'm a parent now, there is no way I'm going to send my kid to an institution that is led by such buffoons that they would actually have a commencement offer on the table than offer not to give this degree because they would cite the president's lack of achievement. This is a president who has a degree himself from Columbia, Harvard University, Harvard Law degree. He was the first editor of the Harvard Law Review, first African-American editor of the Harvard Law Review, University of Chicago law, constitutional law professor. Let's see, served in the State House, United States Senator, the first African-American president, which was an achievement unthinkable even just a few years ago, and has the highest approval rating of any president at this point in his tenure. And that is like a blank slate. We're in wait-and-see mode. We'll see what he does. Arizona State University? Are you kidding me? I think that's worse. I think just judging on the emotional impact of which one, when I go through these two stories, that's a good gauge, my gut. I get so mad at Arizona State University saying, well, we have to kind of wait and see, and they've given it to all these other people. A lot of people think, you know, it's the Catholic thing, going back to that. Which one do you think is more ridiculous? Elaine,
yes.
In Los Angeles. Hi, Elaine.
I'm laughing because I thought we were talking about Notre Dame.
I have both on the table because they're both to me ridiculous. But yeah. Let's start with Notre Dame. You think Notre Dame. So what do you think about that situation?
Okay, well, I just want to say I can understand why Notre Dame wouldn't want someone as honorable as President Obama to speak there. I think they would probably be more in line with people who have molested little boys and have gone to war.
Well, okay, that's taking a shot, a low blow too there, Elaine. I mean,
the Catholic Church.
But you can't say, see, again, you can't use the same tactics that the other side does. If you can't say that all Catholic priests are abusing.
No, I didn't say that.
Well, you kind of did.
Then let me clarify.
Okay.
Because the Catholic Church is protecting people who have molested little boys, and I'm sure they've had speakers there before who have molested little boys.
Well, you know, there's no way of knowing that for sure, but you are correct. I lived in Boston at the time of the Catholic scandal, the Cardinal, what was his name? Can't believe it's escaping me now.
Cushing?
No, the Boston Church. This is where the whole thing really kind of erupted into a global scene.
Mm-hmm.
What
about going to war?
Yeah. Well, that's the argument. That's what Lawrence O'Donnell came back with. He was he was really mad. Listen a little bit of this smackdown.
Yeah, talk to that. Polls don't tell you the truth. They tell you.
In my Catholic school, we pledged allegiance to the flag every day, and the president's picture was right beside that flag that we were pledging allegiance to. This is the same university that invited George W. Bush. This is the same religion that stands in adamant contradiction to the death penalty. This is the same religion whose head, the Pope, pled personally with George W. Bush not to launch an unprovoked invasion and war in Iraq. That same president, George W. Bush, who used the death penalty more than anyone who has ever been in the Oval Office, that president was welcomed at Notre Dame with none of these objections. And, Mike, the only thing I would disagree with in your introduction is this has not divided the Catholic population of the United States. When we get the polls, you're going to find that well over 90% of Catholics think President Obama should go to any university to address them at any time, including Catholic universities. This is a fake controversy run by religious fanatics, and no one else is involved.
There you go. Okay, Elaine.
Real quick, we didn't even mention how the Catholic Church is knee-deep in the slavery.
Now we're a step too far there. I'm not going to go there. I'm not sure quite what you're referring to. But 1-888-64-NANCY, which one is worse? Which situation, which college has mishandled, I'm not even going to debate the merits of it, has mishandled the situation worse? Ashley is in Hollywood. Hi, Ashley. Or Tempe, I hear you're in Arizona. Sorry about that. Hi.
Yeah, I'm in Tempe. And I think, didn't I hear that the president of Notre Dame came out and said that they were a public institution? And he kind of spoke out against that controversy.
I hadn't heard the president's remarks, but obviously they invited the presidents of the United States, so the university itself is in favor of doing this.
Yeah, exactly. And so I think that makes my own.
But it's not a public, it's a private. It's a private. It is. Notre Dame is a private.
It's like, So I know he said something about it.
I don't think it's a public institution, but I think they have the right. He might be saying we have the right to do what we want to do.
He was speaking out in favor of having Obama come.
Correct, but in terms of whether I think Notre Dame, do they receive money from the state of Indiana? I don't know. We'll have someone weigh in on that.
We'll have to look into that. But
U of M is a public university, so I know that. Now you have no excuse. You're in Tempe, home of ASU.
Yeah, and I'm alumni as well.
Oh my gosh!
I'm so embarrassed. I can't even tell you. I am a journalism graduate as well. And it just floors me. But it doesn't surprise me.
What were they thinking? Why do you invite somebody and then say, but you're too green?
I think it was just an attempt to embarrass him.
Really? Is that a conservative university or in management? So you think it was?
It's not supposed to be, but we're in Arizona. People here are more liberal than people like to think, but the people who run things that have the money, they're all Republicans. So. Mm.
And so you're a journalism major from ASU. Well, now I feel bad in lambasting your school as I did.
Oh, no. Oh, I've been reading it all day on the internet. And, I'm embarrassed. I'm ashamed.
Yeah.
I put a lot into my education. And it's like, if he doesn't deserve an honorary one, I don't deserve a real one.
Do you know that there are people, as I look at the blogs, and that say, he doesn't. We have to wait and see what he does. Are you kidding? Not what this man has already accomplished. The odds of being starting out, to a single mother as a, black kid on the South.
They gave Jerry Colangelo an honorary degree. For people who don't know who he is, he used to own the Phoenix Suns and the Arizona Diamondbacks.
A franchise, a sports owner. Nobel Peace Prize?
No, nothing like that. Just owned a couple of sports teams.
Pulitzer Prize novels? Columns?
Not a teacher, not a scholar in any way. Yeah, just owned a couple of sports teams.
Alrighty then. Well, Ashley, your school's fair game then in my book. Sorry, girlfriend. You hold your head high because you've made a distinction. We'll say ASU except for Ashley, because she obviously is a bright student and graduate and serves her school well. Which university screwed up worse is my question. 1-888-64 Nancy. We got more of your calls, lots of them. Hang on, hold on. We'll get right back to you on the other side of the Nancy Skinner Show. I got a lot of calls. Which one's stupider, what Notre Dame did or Arizona State University did in terms of their Notre Dame is objecting because President Obama is pro-choice. Some priests are objecting to that publicly. Arizona State University offered the commencement speech to President Obama but said, we're not going to give you an honorary degree because you haven't proved yourself yet. You don't have a body of work. 1-888-64-NANCY. I boiled it down to this at the break. Age-old hypocrisy, Notre Dame, versus boneheaded arrogance at Arizona State University. Which one's worse, arrogance or hypocrisy? Gosh, this is a theological nightmare for me. Let's go out to, where do we want to go? We want to go to J.D. in Los Angeles. Hi, J.D.
How you doing? A pleasure. Thank you for having me. Listening to you speak about both these colleges and the issues they're having, and the Notre Dame thing, the fact they won't invite him, this is our president of our great country, is borderline insulting that there's this still group of people in this country that can't get over the fact that they lost, Republicans, and power's been shifted. And instead of moving forward and going, all right, great, how can we, kick this country in the butt and make things better, we're going to do little juvenile, childish things like say, oh, no, you're not allowed to come to our school.
Yeah, when we've got, crises of biblical proportions, economic meltdowns, real global actual meltdowns, and institutions where you think grown-ups preside, I completely agree with you, are sitting there really debating, wanting to hang on to the culture wars. You raise a really good question, JD. You know, because we think people are grown-up and that they should be saying, okay, what's most important here? Do you think people are comfortable with the old culture war battles and they're just, that's the shoe that fits, so let's stick with fighting the same old fight we fight? Or are we not seeing it? Are we just moving too quickly for them?
Well, I think a lot of the problem is it goes back to our just primal elementary school playground mentality of we've been the power in charge and we've been the ones who everyone look up to us. And it was very easy when the Democrats were the minority for them to say it's very un-American for you to question anything our leader's doing. And now that they have lost that ability to be given the maturity card and the older card because they were in the position of power, and now they have to do it from almost a, you know, a relinquished step-down role.
Right.
That in the problem that it even has caused, you know, indirectly, is whereas educated people who do want to better the society and look at this country and go, man, this is still the country that there's no other place on earth that I would be more proud to be a part of. But people like me and you now, we have to talk about the idiocracies that these people are presenting.
Well, maybe they're doing what they want to be doing. So which one's worse? I got to run along here.
I'm sorry. You know, I want to say Notre Dame's worse, but then you go and look at Arizona and you go, come on, did you guys really not think this through? Are you that dumb that you're going to say, Mr. Obama, you do not deserve an honorary degree from our university?
That's what I'm saying. Why would I ever send my child to the Arizona State University now that I know that that's their level of competence? You nailed it. JD, that's exactly my point. Jack, what do you think? Which one's stupider?
I don't know. I think it's kind of a tie. I think Notre Dame's kind of petty, really. I mean, I wonder how many of those hypocritical people out there practicing birth control, which is so much against the Catholic Church, but they're jumping all over Obama for some of his beliefs. Then I look at Arizona, and I think, is this political? I mean, he just beat their senator. And as far as things he's done, he takes one trip to Europe, and all the countries have been alienated by Bush administration for 8 years. In 1 week, he's turned them around. He's even solving arguments between China and France. I mean, what do they want this guy to do, walk on water?
apparently. Jack, you know, you raise a really interesting point, and I'm thinking, if you just go back to the Notre Dame situation for a second there, the lives that this president has already saved by the gesture of goodwill to the rest of the world. I want to get into this, too. This whole bowing. Everyone's so mad he bowed to the Saudis. Oh, my God, the right-wing blogs are going out of their mind. If a small gesture of goodwill, I don't care, to another country stops people from dying in a world, in a crazed world with lots of people, then that man has already... He's opened up a lot of places in heaven for a lot of people, good souls, okay? So to me, that it's a crazy thing to say that you wouldn't want him there. Pat Buchanan is off his rocker. So now I'm going to throw the bowing into it. It's really, it is Friday, isn't it, on the Nancy Skinner Show. Attorneys to plead my case. going to keep moving on. Nate Skinner Show. Happy to be here. It's Good Friday, in fact. So Easter weekend on the horizon. 1-888-64-NANCY is the number to the program. Okay. This is going to be a tough Easter for a lot of people who are facing economic hardship, highest unemployment rate in 25 years. Trust me, I'm in Detroit. We know. We've been doing this for a long time. We have experience. And we've had shootings, the Binghamton shootings this week, and in Philadelphia as well. A lot of tragedy on the horizon. This is a very unique perspective. Dr. Robert Jeffries is the pastor of the 12,000-member First Baptist Church in Dallas. He's also author of the best-selling book Outrageous Truth, and is saying in this book that God has to be held ultimately responsible for events like the shootings in Binghamton, that God is the one who makes things happen, and we have to hold him responsible, and somehow he's going to turn them around. So Dr. Jeffries joins me to talk about this what has become a controversial sort of premise to this whole thing, and we probably don't agree on a lot of things, but we're here to talk about it. Pastor Jeffries, Dr. Jeffries, whichever is your preference, we're glad to have you.
How about just Robert, Nancy?
Robert's great.
It's great to talk to you.
Well, thanks for being here, and happy Good Friday, as unhappy as that is. Before we get into the whole situation, I know you're trying to talk about the current events of the unemployment and shootings and whatnot, but I know you're also Baptist, not Catholic. I have two quick questions. One, you're in Dallas, and you're the pastor of the largest Baptist church there. Has President Bush, former President Bush, shown up yet to your church? And,
well, you know, he is Methodist, Nancy, so I imagine he's going to go back to Highland Park Methodist Church where he and Laura worshiped before he became president.
Really? He's Methodist? You know what? I did not. I guess I was thinking he was Baptist.
No.
And two, you're not Catholic, certainly. Do you have a thought? We just finished a discussion about Notre Dame.
And President Obama.
Correct.
Well, of course, I support the traditional Catholic position that is pro-life, and I do think it's quite interesting that they would have the president, but I'm not going to lash them and bash them for doing that. I mean, I think most universities, if they had an opportunity to host the president, whoever he was and whatever party he was with, they would invite him to come. So I'm not going to bash Notre Dame for that.
Okay. But you're kind of holding God responsible for calamity, so that's a whopper, okay, Doctor? That is a whopper to hold God ultimately responsible for what we, his mortal creations on earth, are up to.
Well, really, I'm not the one holding him responsible. He takes responsibility himself. In the Old Testament, he said, I'm the one who creates well-being and causes calamity. And, you know, I think, Nancy, when we see these shootings and we see the other horrible things and the earthquake in Italy, the natural response is, where was God in all of this? And some well-meaning but misdirected Christians try to let God off the hook by saying, oh, God didn't have anything to do with that. He would have liked to have stopped it, but he couldn't. And in an attempt to let God off the hook, they end up castrating the Almighty. And, you know, God is powerful. If God didn't even directly cause these things, but if he had the power to stop them and didn't, then he has to be held ultimately accountable. But he does take that responsibility, and he says, you know, the story hasn't been concluded yet. If the message of Good Friday and Easter or anything, it's that God can take the tragedy of a Good Friday and turn it into a great triumph on Easter Sunday.
It's amazing that you said that, because I had printed a story out that caught my attention, oddly enough, from the Times of UK, a story about the Italian earthquake. Divine intervention helped Antonio Colangeli find his son. I wonder what your take is on this, because essentially the story, I read the story and it touched me deeply. This guy, his son is 20 years old and was staying with some friends. They talked, and his son ended up in a different part of town staying with some friends when this earthquake hit. This is a doctor. And he didn't know where his son was actually staying, whose house or whatever, what neighborhood. But the earthquake hit, and he knew that his son had been in that area, so he was running around trying to find where his son was. And without any guidance, he ended up finding his son in the rubble. And he was looking around for someone to help rescue his son. And this is right out of the UK. This is online, the Times of London. He said, I'm not a madman, but I saw what was an emergency worker. Let me find this quote. And he said the guy looked like he had a halo over his head.
Hmm.
And that was the guy that he went to and who rescued his son. And what struck me about that story is that, and I think we're off a few degrees here because, you know, in tragedy, look at that story. Now, this guy, he's a doctor, some sort of thing. You know, we've heard amazing stories like this. You have no idea where your son is all of a sudden in all of Italy, and you find him, and you see somebody, and he's not, he said he wasn't even particularly religious, but he's looking at this guy, and it's almost as if he were directed at the guy because he said it looked like he had a halo, so he followed this guy and found his son.
You know, I don't have any doubt that there are many miracles like that that came from that earthquake. And God, you know, God is at work. His plan was for that boy to be alive. The cynic would say, well, Nancy, what about the people who didn't survive? What about them? The point is, God is bigger than we are. He has a plan that is above our plan. And like somebody said, even when we can't see his hand, we have to trust his heart that he's doing the wise and good thing, even when we can't understand.
I guess the essential question here, Dr. Jeffries, is does God micromanage at that level? You know, I don't doubt. I'm Catholic, but I'm informed and believe in a lot of different spiritual traditions. And so I don't think he's micromanaging. You honestly think God's sitting up there saying, all right, now Italy needs an earthquake. To the essence of my question, I'm going to really put you on the spot there.
Okay.
Do you think that there is some personification, a God that is a grandfatherly type figure sitting there saying, okay, time for the earthquake in Italy?
Well, first of all, God is a spirit, okay? When he came in human form, he came in the person of Jesus Christ. But the question you're asking, does he have an individual blueprint for every detail of the universe and of your life? And again, the only answer we have is what comes from the Bible, Nancy. And the answer is yes. Jesus said he's even numbered the hairs on our head. Neither Jesus was telling the truth or he wasn't. The psalmist said he has written every day of our life in his book before we've lived one of them. It's like somebody said, there are no maverick molecules in the universe. It's all under God's control.
And would you also say that God loves?
Just say that gives me great hope, Nancy, on this Easter weekend to know that I'm not the victim of random events or random circumstances. That God is firmly in control of my life. That's a message of hope for people.
What about free will? What about the underpinning for free will and that God gave us free will? So that we could, face whatever situation that we face.
And God has given us a will and an ability to choose, but even that is ultimately under his control. You know, Martin Luther said one time, even the devil is God's devil. And God's will was big enough to encompass the fall of Adam and Eve, the fall of Lucifer. It was even big enough to encompass the death, the torture of his own son. So God does have a plan he's working out, and yet somehow that plan, in a mysterious way, allows for us to make choices.
All right, Dr. Jeffries, you have caused some controversy in other areas.
Uh-oh.
Out there. I'm from Michigan, and we had a big controversy where you were opposed to a gay rights here in Michigan. Do you think God loves everybody?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
So if God loves everybody equally, then would he love gays just as much as straight human beings?
Well, God hates sin, though, and there are passages in the Bible that says God hates sinners. You know, the fact is God loves us, and he wants the best for us, and he knows what, you know, he's the one, by the way, Nancy, who created sex. I mean, just think about it. He stood up, he was up there in heaven one day. He created the whole idea of sex and said, boy, wouldn't this be fun if you did this and then you did that? I mean, that's an amazing thought when you think about it. He created the whole idea of sex. His word is an owner's manual. It tells us how well our life operates best in every circumstance. And Jesus said in Matthew 19 that sex ought to be between a man and a woman in the protectiveness of a marriage relationship. Jesus said that a man shall leave a mother and shall cleave to his wife and the two shall become one flesh. And God says any deviation from that, whether it's incest or adultery or premarital sex, any of those things is a deviation from my perfect plan for you.
But, Pastor Jeffries, we're almost out of time here. I just got to say, he also said, do unto others as you would have them do unto yourself, and love one another as you would like to be loved. And so doesn't that trump all? Doesn't that trump everything?
It doesn't trump God's word. And
that is God's word. The golden rule, the greatest of these is love, he said. The greatest of all of these is love.
But you can love people and want the best for them, and God's plan in the Bible is the best plan for everybody.
Well, I would tell you, you put it out there. The book is Outrageous Truth. It's pretty outrageous that God would want anything bad to happen. I think my view is that we kind of make our choices and deal with it. And he loves us all and wishes that we'd make better choices. But you've got your truth, too. Dr. Robert Jeffries, pastor of the First Baptist Church in Dallas. Have a very blessed Easter. And thank you,
you too,
for joining
Nancy.
Me.
Okay. Thanks for having me.
Great. All right, folks. What do you think of that? That one would be sort of weird. Dr. Jeffries has caused quite a bit of controversy. God's responsible for this. I think that's kind of a, what is that? Just blame it on God? No, not so much. I think we're kind of responsible for our own actions. He's given us a lot of rope to go there. 1-888-64 Nancy, and I do want to talk about this. It's so weird that I just pulled this story out about the earthquake on Good Friday. Maybe because it is Good Friday. So I want to jump right back in here. By their fruits you shall know them. If I remember my scripture, I'm not a pastor, nor did I stay at a Holiday Inn Express last night, but I remember that one. Robert Jeffries, my guest, my former guest pastor of the First Baptist in Dallas, controversial guy. I'm just going to say this because I'm going to be speaking tomorrow at an event at 2 p.m. in Detroit, and we're going to have Jane Hampshire from Fire Dog Lake. She's in Washington, D.C. at 2 o'clock tomorrow. So in the last half hour of the program today, if we get cut out of time, I'm going to replay an interview I did with Jane. I'm running off to do my Fox Business Network appearance, but the reason I'm doing that is that the stream cut out. A lot of people said they didn't get to hear it. It's about the situation with Chase holding Chrysler hostage in this workout plan, and that's why we're all speaking tomorrow. And to me, it's your actions. It's what you do, okay? It's by your fruits you will know them, if we're talking about theocracy and what God wants. And the pastor just wrote this book saying that God does everything and that people aren't held. I think it's a cop-out, frankly. When he said that God is responsible for punishing people. No, you are the sum total of your actions in life, and God doesn't make bad things happen to you. I believe you have a much more active role in your life in creating a reality. Steve is in Studio City, California. Hi, Steve.
Yeah, how you doing? I don't know if the pastor's still on, but whenever I hear these kinds of conversations, I just can't fathom what century we're in, where we're still pretending that there's some God or some man or some entity or some thing that cares about what we say or do or eat or where we are or what we wear or who's talking to who on what day or what you're eating or not eating. It's so silly to me and beyond imagination that anybody can be fooled. I mean, I know why, because you're fooled into this stuff when you're a child and you're not capable.
Well, do you know, is there a difference? Do you believe in God?
Of course not.
You don't believe in the concept of a divine?
Zeus?
Okay, how about a divine presence?
What does that mean?
That's why none of us know, Steve.
No, but we don't. That's the whole thing. Like anything else that you talk about, if you don't know, you don't sit there saying, but there must be. You just say, no, it doesn't seem like there
is. You know how I know? I'll give you a good example. Well, I certainly know. Look at this guy. Look at this guy, this story. Did you hear that? He says right here, okay, he had no idea where his son was in this whole section of Italy. Here goes. He said, he said, I'm not a madman. I simply had this intuition. And he said, there were a lot of mechanical diggers, each moving through the debris very slowly and precisely. I didn't know what to do. I saw one of the cave experts drafted in to help the rescue. I'm not a madman, but I swear he appeared as if illuminated by some sort of divine halo. I followed him around the edge of the rubble shouting, Gilo, Gilo. Then he heard it, a faint voice. Papa, I'm here. I can't breathe. He pulled his son out. That is, does that not say to you? And you know what else, Steve? Let me say one more thing, and then you can answer. You know, you want to believe in God? Be a hospice volunteer. I was a hospice volunteer for several years in Chicago. Yeah. You sit there with people who are dying, Steve, and you will have no doubt that there is an afterlife. There's not a doubt among hospice volunteers because the stories you hear and the things that are said and what transpires in the transition from life to death will give you comfort beyond any comfort. And stories like this, that's how I know. That's how I know, because I've seen it with my own eyes. And it's something that I don't have a doubt. I don't know what form, shape. I don't know the details. Don't think he's micromanaging much. But do I believe there's a God? Absolutely, and without any doubt. With that, I'm going to buy my fruits tomorrow. I'll be getting out there working for people like you and me, because that's what he also said to do. Take care of your neighbor. And you will hear Jane Hampshire at Fire Dog Lake and what we're up to. We'll talk about it on Monday. Have a happy Easter. Going to get into today. You will. Weird day. Pirates going on. I'm going to take on Grover Norquist later. How's that? Turn that up, John. I need a dose. Get into it, man, because we do have lots of trouble today. It's the Nancy Skinner Show. Hi, how are you? I'm Nancy Skinner. 1-888-64-NANCY or 1-888-NANCY. Okay, so before we get, I do Grover Norquist. He's coming up. I've got lots of stuff going on, but I tell you what, the wildest thing, talk about tea parties, all these tea parties, and people are mad because the government's trying to prevent a global meltdown. We talk a lot about this here on the show. Checking out my friends over at Fire Dog Lake, our great website there that combines knowledge with activism. Marcy Wheeler from Michigan, Empty Wheel, posted this post about J.P. Morgan Chase, who is essentially, they are holding the reorganization of Chrysler hostage as the as a major secured debt holder. They are holding it hostage. And I'm reading this post that she has, and don't believe me about the fact that it's Chase holding Chrysler hostage and would prefer to see it go into bankruptcy and get their money in liquidation. How about the Wall Street Journal? There's a link right there in Fire Dog Lake. You can follow this whole thing. Big banks resist call to aid Chrysler. That's an April 4th article that the banks that loan Chrysler $6.8 billion are resisting government pressure to swap more than $5 billion of that for stock to slash the carmaker's debt, according to people familiar with the matter that is hindering Chrysler's effort to restructure outside of bankruptcy court. And it's also slowing the effort to forge this alliance with Fiat by May 1st as required by the administration to get further financing and as the way forward for Chrysler. And it goes on to go, this article goes on to say, look, they're secured because they're secured, and they themselves are the recipients of, I'll get to the bottom of this, all these numbers here, billions and billions of dollars as both direct recipient, as counterparty to AIG. They've gotten boatloads of money. Now they're threatening to send Chrysler into bankruptcy, which would cost alone in Michigan something like 300,000 jobs and more all across America because they're secured and they don't care. Governor Granholm, don't believe Wall Street Journal? How about Governor Granholm? Michigan governor today issued a statement that said she's calling on J.P. Morgan and other banks that got bailout funds to return the favor to Chrysler. She said this morning that any banks that receive rescue money from the federal government should be open to concessions on the Chrysler debts they hold so the automakers can reach a deal with Fiat. Part of what stands in the way of the deal is the debt, she said, following a panel discussion this morning. And that any of those debt holders who are receiving backing from the government's TARP should be willing to take a haircut, or in other words, write down the value of that debt. Marcy Wheeler writes, nice work, Governor. Now, do you have any of those Chase cards to cut up? So I'm, you know, looking at all this evidence thinking, oh, my God. Like, I'm one of the biggest proponents for keeping the auto industry, the heart of manufacturing, alive in America out there. I drive a Chrysler Sebring, and I have two Chase bank accounts. I am a perfect candidate for the effort being led by Fire Dog Lake to close my Chase accounts and video that. In a second, I'm going to play for you a little video of Marcy Wheeler doing just that, closing her Chase accounts. But my video, when we do this and post it, will have me actually closing my Chase account and getting in a Chrysler and driving away because I drive a Chrysler Sebring. So Jane Hampshire, the founder of Fire Dog Lake, is with me, joins me today to talk about this. And I'm so pleased, Jane, first of all, that you guys made this connection, connected the dots, and are out there talking about it. Thanks for being here, Jane.
Thank you so much for having me today, Nancy. And I'm really glad that you're on this because I think it's really important.
It's huge. It's huge. You know, I first heard about this some nebulous connection. But when the Wall Street Journal, you know, confirms essentially that Chrysler, why don't you tell people, Jane, I read the article last night as I was falling asleep. I knew we were going to do this. So all the numbers are how much they've gotten. I don't know if that's handy by you. But they have confirmed that J.P. Morgan Chase, I mean, obviously that was a merged company, and has a huge presence in Michigan. I started that bank account years ago. I've been banking with them for, oh, gosh, 15 years at least, because they were Bank of America or Chicago Bank when I lived in Chicago, National Bank of Chicago, I believe it was, and then they merged Bank One Bank. I've always said that, like, you know, Red Rum that from the movie The Shining, where it's really murder spelled backwards. That it's like Bank One is One Bank. Oh, my God, One Bank. But anyways, now it's called J.P. Morgan Chase Bank. And tell us what they're doing to Chrysler.
Well, Chrysler had to take out some loans in 2007 when they weren't looking too good. And they took out those loans, and they backed it with the assets of the company. So their recourse, you know, they're backed by the assets of the company, the factories, you know, the patents, everything else. The loans that are given to GM don't have that, so this isn't an issue there.
Mm-hmm.
But their government is asking Chrysler to the Chrysler bondholders, the loan holders, to write down the value of their loans to, I believe, 33 cents or 25 cents on the dollar, 33, 25. And the loan holders don't want to do that because they say, if we can just take Chrysler into bankruptcy, we, as the first position debtors, are going to be able to just take all the assets of the company. So that means that the pension funds don't get their money, the retirees don't get their money, 200,000 jobs get lost, and they just sell off Chrysler for parts and keep the cash. Now, they might be able to make an argument, that this was a good thing to do. Were they not the recipients of $25
billion? $25 billion? Okay.
$25 billion in TARP funds that we know about. We don't know how much more they may have gotten because they may have been one of the counterparties in other
I think they were. They were certainly.
They were counterparties, but, you know, we don't really know. What the whole setup is so opaque that it's difficult to know how much J.P. Morgan has got. But directly, they've gotten $25 billion. Mm-hmm. So it's ridiculous that they're sitting there with public funds and deciding that they're going to be the Grinch and pull these loans and make sure that, you know, the pensioners and the retirees and everybody don't get their money, but they'll get theirs.
I mean, now, it's obscene not only because of Chrysler and the situation, Jane, but I'm just listening to the news here in Detroit. It says that there's a 15-person team from the Obama administration that landed here in Detroit to work with General Motors as well as Chrysler, but the 15 are going to General Motors. The big concern, it's the New York Auto Show going on right now. The big concern, however, is that as we've tried to relate to people, because of the interwoven nature of those automakers and their suppliers, if Chrysler goes down, they could take a supplier down, so it doesn't matter what GM does. Even if Ford, which has not even received any money because they've refinanced at a better time before the storm hit, even with that situation, Chase is holding more than Chrysler. I think this is where we got to advance the story. More than Chrysler hostage because of this chain, this domino effect that exists with the auto industry.
Well, just remember that these companies, too, are using our tax dollars to pay lobbyists to be in Washington, D.C., to lobby for their bonuses, their executive bonuses, to the tune of $1 billion for AIG alone for the rest of this year.
So the money they won't take on a haircut to work with the largest manufacturing enterprise in the country, they're spending on lobbyists.
And remember one other thing here, and this is...
I don't want to, Jane. I don't want to remember anything more.
Remember those things called credit default swaps?
Yes. Okay. How could we forget?
They probably have something like this in place to guarantee them if these loans go bad. If Chrysler went down, they've probably got those in place.
So they have insurance on the loss that they feel is more valuable to recoup in liquidation, and they probably have insurance to hedge that bet anyways.
Exactly.
So it's a double, it's a twofer for them.
Exactly.
They could take down, one in 10 jobs, frankly, if you want to, J.P. Morgan Chase. All right, when we come back, we're going to see what we can do about it. They're running around their tea parties. We got some, Jane has some news to break here about what we're going to do about it. I'll give you a hint. What I'm going to do about it as a 15, 20-year Chase customer who drives a Chrysler, I'm going to be running with scissors. Okay? Running with scissors. Over this. It's got me so upset. 1-888-64-TROUBLE, FireDogLake.com. They got a lot of people who are cutting up their Chase cards, who are mad as hell about this. This is really, it's financial blackmail. It is economic blackmail. There's a word that's even bigger than I can't think of what they're doing here. And we're not going to be any part of it, darn it. So 1-888-64-NANCY is the number to the program. If you have ideas, we're going to tell you what we're up to. Take your calls, and Jane Hampshire from Fire Dog Lake will join us on the Nancy Skinner Show again. Money, money, money. It's really outrageous. Really, really outrageous. It's Nancy Skinner Show. Nancy Skinner, 164, or 1-888-64, Nancy, I should say. That number's still free, not held hostage by J.P. Morgan Chase Bank. Jane Hampshire is with me from Fire Dog Lake, the founder of the fabulous Fire Dog Lake website, which is really all over this effort. If you're just joining the show, here's a short story. J.P. Morgan Chase is a major bondholder of Chrysler's, for one, and Chrysler has to cut a deal with Fiat to survive. Chrysler has some good product in the pipeline. Chrysler is, it's part of this supply chain that's very important to manufacturing and continuing operations of the auto industry. So Chase is deciding, I've got the full Wall Street Journal article. According to people inside, they're saying, hey, look, it's better for us if we let Chrysler go to bankruptcy and liquidate their assets because it's secured debt. We'll do better off with the plants and with the real estate and whatnot than taking a haircut like everyone else. The only problem is that Chase has received $25 billion in taxpayer funds, according to this report. Another report that says that the Treasury folks are trying to talk to them and the auto task force. The government has very little leverage to force the banks to make concessions if they believe they'll be better off in bankruptcy court. But since these same banks, including J.P. Morgan Chase, are the recipients of billions of dollars of bailout funds, they should be forced. But apparently there's no legal mechanism to do it. So Jane Hampshire and us, who needs legal mechanisms? We have Fire Dog Lake and you and me, and I happen to drive a Chrysler Sebring and have two Chase accounts that I've had for 20 years. So I'm going to close them. Marcy Wheeler did a video of her trip to the Chase local bank, and I'm going to play that for you in a little bit. And she closed her account, went to a local savings and loan institution in Michigan, and cut her cards up. That was the fun part. Now people are all writing in saying they're going to cut up their Chase cards and move their money and put their money where their mouth is, and that is to support a domestic auto industry. So Jane, you guys are also what's going on this Saturday, April 11th? Demonstrations all across America. What role are you playing, and tell us about these?
There will be demonstrations all across America. There is a group, you can go to their website. It is A New Way Forward. And they are letting people self-organize demonstrations all across the country. I believe there's 89 cities or something like that right now. And we're working with them. They're an all-volunteer organization, and they ask for, they ask for help, and we're happy to give it to them. So Mike Lux and I are going to be the honorary chairman, co-chairs, and we are going to both...
With Bill Greider?
And with Bill Greider.
I love him. You know, he taught me so much about what I know about the he wrote Two Worlds, Ready or Not, about global capitalism. He's amazing.
He is amazing. So we're going to be speaking in Washington, D.C. at Lafayette Park this Saturday at 2 p.m., but Marcy Wheeler is going to be speaking in Detroit, and there are going to be demonstrations all over the country. So everybody should go down and say what you feel about the banks right now, because the other side, these stupid teabaggers, are dangerous.
Well, I'll be with Marcy. I'll show up in Detroit. So put me down on your website as being with Marcy. We'll speak. I'll speak with her, and then I'll get my video of me cutting up my Chase cards too.
Watch the video on Fire Dog Lake.
Okay, we'll put the video up on Fire Dog Lake, Jane Hampshire. Thanks for lighting a fire under this one.
Thanks, Nancy.
You bet. Good luck Saturday. We'll talk to you next week or sometime soon. Okay.
Okay.
Great. All right, I'm out of time. What do you think about this 1-888-64 Nancy? A Chrysler and Chase accounts. Who thought? More to come on the Nancy Skinner Show.